Good day, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is 8/31/2002. Today's session is Faith-Based and Faithful, Lutheran's Social Ministry and New Initiatives. Lutheran Social Services in America goes to Washington and works with the White House. Should it? Can we be professional and faithful? The presenter will be Drew Gensler. Let's listen in.
Really a summary, roll of tape, really a summary of what we've been talking about, and that is Lutheran Services in America and their role, their responsibilities in terms of faith-based social service, and the sort of role we're playing with specifically the faith-based initiative. This has been an initiative by this administration in particular, but making explicit the kinds of questions that have always been implicit in social service ministry. What does a faith-based service look like? How explicitly and implicitly do we, as Lutherans, share the gospel through our social ministry? And what sorts of questions were being challenged on that by the administration to say, you're a professional group, are you faith-based? Are you too faith-based? Are you faith-based enough? And what does that mean for very practical, realistic things like funding and government health and safety standards and things like that? So we've been exploring those questions this week, and I wanted to start as usual. I think most of you have been here before, so if you wouldn't mind, once again, just going through very quickly and saying your name and any possible connection you might have with Lutheran social ministry. Implicit or explicit, as we were just talking about, indirectly, directly. Congregation work, volunteers, maybe you know somebody who's adopted a child or has gotten a home or something like that. Let's start here. We'll give you some time since I know you. Who's going to think about it?
My name's Mark, and I don't know that I have any kind. Although, my mother did work as the financial director at a Lutheran social service agency in Cleveland.
What a coincidence. So did my mother.
Really?
Funny. Yeah.
We have the same mother, actually.
And I live here in Happy Holden Village, which is itself a Lutheran social ministry on some level.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
What's your job?
I'm the librarian.
I'm Angela, and as I said before, I'm a Lutheran, so that's my most explicit connection.
My name is Alex, and unfortunately I'm not Lutheran, so I can't claim that connection, but Episcopalian and other social service connections.
I'm Luann. Our youngest daughter was adopted from Korea through Lutheran Social Services in Minnesota. No present real connection.
But an ongoing one.
Yeah. Remember?
I'm Leah, as I mentioned earlier, no current direct connection, though I served the congregation of the former LCA as lay associate. It was a very inner-city congregation, and we did have a lot of connections both with the secular social service agencies in the area and the Lutheran social services.
Great.
And my name's Ed, and I'm from University of Lutheran, and I do team feed once every 6 weeks, and we're going to start a woman's shelter in our basement after the daycare leaves, and I'm a stewardship chair for the regular church.
Great. Who you said you team?
Team feeding.
Who do you do that with?
I just act as a kind of a host. It's a Methodist church that comes in from Everett that actually does the work.
Actually, my church, Episcopal Church, participates in team meet as well.
Cool.
It is. I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah. Doing it Monday night.
Wow. These are connections. These are really cool. Would you like to identify yourself up there?
Oh, sure. I'm Barbara. my colleague who was the teaching staff coordinator with me the first half of summer, Kent Burgess, is the CEO of a large nursing home complex in Billings, Montana. So I think he's on the board that helps set up all of the services in America. Lutheran Services in America, I think. And I live in Chicago, so we have a lot of contact with people in the National ELC, but I know it's broader than that, it includes Missouri Synod.
Yeah, that's right. It's an important point. LSA is, we've explored this at length on Monday, but just worth stating again that LSA is a combination, not of the church bodies themselves, but of the social ministries of the ELCA and the Missouri Synod. And in the last 2 years, I've really seen how there's some significant theological differences and practical differences really are... They're not unimportant, but they're secondary when it comes to some of those services we've been able to provide together jointly to people who need them. So it's been kind of a neat experience in that sense. Alex, if I can put you on the spot for a second, too. Alex has also worked in Washington on Capitol Hill, and so since a good half, at least half of what we've been talking about this week pertains to our federal government and faith-based ministry, that might be another connection too to draw on, but...
Right.
Well, good. It's good to have you here. And this is, as I said, really kind of a summarizing day. And I'm going to do a couple of, we'll probably still end like a quarter of 12 so we can get to lunch, maybe 10 up if that's okay. And we'll have a couple kind of wrap-up activities. And I'm going to need you to help also, help us think about some of these summarizing questions. I have a few, but if you have a few, I'd rather hear yours and have the group and maybe me talk about them. I have some fallback ones too. So... what I wanted to do first is actually set up a chart. I'm kind of a visual learner. I don't know how many of you are here. Audio?
Both.
You're both?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very definitely.
Well, I'll try to talk and do this at the same time.
Okay.
But if I can't do that, I will at least set up kind of a schematic for what we did this past week, just so you have an idea of where we are. This is big, big picture. And if you have specific questions, please let me know. On Monday, we talked about what Lutheran Services in America is. It's a roll-up national network of about 280 Lutheran social ministry groups across the country. Lutheran social ministry has a long, long commitment, pre-Constitution, colonial days. But Lutheran Services in America is the national roll-up of all of these groups, and it was formed in the past 5 years when actually the board that Kent was on and others decided it would be a good thing to have a kind of national Lutheran presence. So we talked about what LSA is. Much to our surprise, I think some of you heard me mention this, that the nonprofit Times, a magazine that rates a lot of these things, has named Lutheran Services the largest nonprofit in the country for the past 3 years in a row, which is really quite an interesting position to be in, because we tend to go about our congregational work and our local social ministry work kind of quietly. You know, I mean, it's effective work, but we do it quietly, and we do it in parallel with the other groups, and we never thought of this, what this roll-up might look like. And so we try to talk about that when it's helpful, but we don't really try to, you know, brag about it in any sense, because it's ultimately work and faith-based. Yes?
You probably mentioned this. I haven't been here, but how long has LSA been in existence?
This is our fifth year. I think it was 97, I think, was the first year. And we've been sort of counting, measuring nationwide for 5 years. It has to do with... also the way that some of our really close working partners like Catholic Charities counts their various hospitals and things. They have a separate association for that. But obviously they'd be much larger if that was important to all of us. I mean, among ourselves, we don't really talk about it in, you know, bragging rights. But it's important to be able to say, in some congressional offices, it's important to go in and be able to say, I represent so many of these social ministry groups, and we feed and clothe and house, you know, so many people in the country. So I guess it was worth stating. Tuesday, we talked about this thing I started our class with today. It's a faith-based initiative, and that's the way that the administration is looking at changing some of the funding streams to make it easier for groups that more directly use Bible study and worship components and more explicitly religious things, to have those groups get more, or at least have more accessibility to federal funds, more funding, and... less accountability. It's argued, that's one criticism, that there is less accountability for that funding in terms of local health and safety standards and things like that. The groups can file differently. They don't have to check in with as many forms and procedures and things. That's not the current law, but that's the proposal, part of the proposal of the faith-based initiative. So we talked about that, and I really want to kind of put that, if this line here is kind of loosely church-state, the faith-based and community initiatives really shared, I think, by those is there's some shared assumptions here. Wednesday we talked about what the faith-based and community initiative is in terms of its government funding. That was one of my drier sessions, to be honest, but we talked about legislation and about what the sort of substance of these provisions are, and if they were pertaining more toward charity or more to justice as social concepts. And so we talked about that.
I missed that one.
That's quite all right.
The others were good.
There were a number of concepts that the group felt really pertained more to charity, which may not be a bad word if you go to its Greek root, charism, which means sort of gifts of the Spirit, and gifts perhaps equally shared, as Paul tells us, and we went over that somewhat yesterday.
Which was very good. But
that was an interesting...
That's excellent. He just happened to pull that out.
I thought it was a good point to make.
Me too.
That those gifts shared, you know, with the sense that they are given by God, and you're stewards of them, and share them. But so charity, nonetheless, has come to mean, in the current legislative context, it's developed a negative connotation. It's sort of the haves giving to the have-nots. And we're talking about how that reinforces the social standing of the haves and the have-nots. And is that a helpful thing? And where justice might be seen and what the nature of justice might be in all this. So we talked about that in terms of the government structure on Wednesday. Thursday, I'm going to draw this like water, because theology is a little murky, as we all know. You can also, yeah, if you look through water at something, like Mark and I were hiking yesterday, if you look at the bottom of the clear, even if it's clear water, things are still distorted. You know, things look bigger or smaller, and they kind of expand and contract. That's kind of what, I mean, there are very different ways of looking at theological principles, as we all know. But nonetheless, under these explicit questions for faith-based groups are implicit assumptions about what theology is and what it means to people, and how you go about spreading the gospel. So it's really a two-way thing. And then today, we're going to talk about summarizing some of the ways that really the faith-based initiative is the government asking faith-based social service who you are as a faith-based group. What are your assumptions about theology? What are Lutherans' assumptions about giving out a bowl of soup? Is that the gospel? Or does that come with a sermon, to put it pretty bluntly? What I wanted to talk about a little bit today is our response, LSA's response to the federal government. There are very explicit ways LSA pays me and others to talk with the government, sometimes try to influence things, sometimes try to monitor them in a much more passive role. But we are very active in Washington and other cities and state capitals around the country on legislation. And so it's kind of the arrow going back the other way. The faith-based community initiative, you can think of that as like a piece of maybe flotsam or something on the sea. You know, which way do the winds blow it? Back and forth. And so, yeah, do you have a...
Could you say a little more about Luther's two kingdoms theory, or is that inappropriate at this point?
I think that might be helpful, especially with this sort of dichotomy I've laid out. Yeah. Well, the two kingdoms, or the two rules doctrine, was something developed, sort of mentioned haphazardly by Luther, quite honestly, and developed by succeeding generations of reformers. But it was the notion that not only is the church, and LSA considers itself an expression of the church has certain responsibilities by virtue of being sort of the body of Christ, the representatives in the world. But dealing with a very different governing structure in the Reformation era, reformers were saying that there are also certain responsibilities that the government has by sort of instituted by the divine, sort of the divine order of things. Now, that got them into trouble occasionally when it talked about, you know, making war and stemming rebellion and things. But it also included very helpful notions like protecting citizens and providing for the common good. That was kind of that wasn't necessarily a new idea, but to place that opposite the church's idea of their responsibility was kind of a new concept. And so we can see that what that does for us today is not to have an over-against relationship with the government. I think that's a helpful point to bring up, that it's okay to talk in the world, not trying to put something over on the government, and not being the government's lackeys either. But Martin Luther King said I thought pretty well, the government, or the church, is really the conscience of the state.
Well, he was good anyway.
So I think I think that's a good kind of role for us to keep in mind. Well, what I wanted to do, secondly, this is sort of a very brief, very broad overview summary to catch some people up and let you know what we were talking about. I'd like to read a couple of statistics. This is out of the Pew Forum in Washington. Is doing a series of statistics and forums on American views on religion, politics, and policy. It's very interesting stuff. And I'm going to read just a couple of statistics here for you and see what you might think of these. This is kind of an annual thing based on what happened last September. But this is it's not really measure change from that. It's to measure our sort of ongoing views. This question is about America's... I'm sorry, I thought you had it.
No,
it
was just for my husband.
America's strength... Is America's strength based on religious faith? And that was their wording, religious faith. A total of 58% of Americans said yes. 30% said no, it's not based on religious faith per se. The white evangelical total, as you might expect, was pretty high. 83% of white evangelicals said America's strength is based on religious faith. 14% of white evangelicals said no. They break these down differently. White mainline, this would be where they would put Lutherans. Lutherans were 57, or I'm sorry, white mainline churches were 57-37. 57% said yes, America's strength is based on religious faith. 37% said no, it's not. White Catholic parishioners said 58-36, about the same numbers as white mainline. 58% said yes, America's strength is based on religious faith. They include here, that as kind of an unfortunate roll-up, but they have a black church total. That would include, I say unfortunate because that includes a broad variety of black parishioners. But they were 69% yes and 28% no, America's strength is not based on religious faith. So some interesting dichotomies, and we have slightly over half the total of the country saying yes in some way. If there's a unique nature about our vision, we talked one day in here about our visions for social renewal, social transformation. America has kind of a unique role, and Alex gave me a great article yesterday in Harper's that I brought just as a kind of a resource. It's in the context of 1 year after September 11th, but it talks about our views on our sort of unique vision, the city on the hill. Are we morally, in some sense, unique? Are we a progression of other things? So I leave that question to you. Yes, please.
Do you have any Islamic or any other
in here?
Yeah.
No. Surprisingly, they did not measure that here. They might have in other questions, actually. And here, you can take a look at this. This is, they're measuring, let's see. Yeah, they're measuring this actually before September 11th, and this was kind of an ongoing thing over that period. They obviously didn't know about it, but I mean, this is when they started beforehand. These are earlier questions, but it'd be interesting to see how they are split up. Also, yeah. Okay, does the U.S. have special protection from God? Special protection. This is a lot closer. 48% said yes, so a plurality, but less than half. And 40% said no. 12% said don't know. And to be quite honest, I might be in the don't know. I'd probably say there's no, you know, not a specific protection from God, but I like to think that God, in a broader sense, protects all of us because God cares for us. But so that's an interesting, you know, phrasing question, semantics question about the question itself. In terms of race religion categories, white evangelicals, 71%, so they really held up the, you know, the high end of this, that the U.S. does have special protection from God. 22% said no. White mainline parishioners were 40% yes, 45% no. So a plurality of mainline Christians would say not particularly. They were also higher on the don't know. And this is interesting to me. The Catholic parishioners were even lower, 39% yes, 48% no. So almost half said not in particular. It has something to do sociologically with who these groups of people are and how they understand their ties and assimilation in the U.S. So anyway, one more based specifically on what we're talking about. Government, they broke this down in different categories. The thing is, government should help needy, the needy being a broad term, even if it means the following. So the government should help the needy, even if it means foregoing tax cuts. Boy, is that the center of the argument. 66% of the people interviewed said, yes, the government should help the needy, even if it means foregoing tax cuts. That I would suggest that that flies in the face of some of the public argument, the case made for tax cuts. 28% disagreed and said, no, foregoing tax cuts might be as important or more important. Or perhaps, I mean, to be fair about it, perhaps cutting taxes in that case would help, would lead to an indirect sort of trickle-down to help people. That's sort of getting out all sides on the table. Government should help the needy, even if it means cuts in programs. And that's the other side of the faith-based initiative. The criticism that the government, I don't mean to make it sort of an us-them issue, but our federal bureaucracy, our departments, should draw back a bit and allow faith-based social services to provide more and more of the service. Because after all, don't we do it better? That's the case made. So the statistics on this are government should help the needy, even if it means cuts in programs. Meaning, perhaps here, meaning other, you know, non-social service programs, cuts in those programs to help. 57%, so more than half, not as much as the other question, but 57% said the government should help the needy, even if it means cuts in other programs, which is interesting. 37% said they disagree. So some statistics from Pew Forum on American Views. There are quite a few more in here, and they have actually another study of theirs was specifically about a sort of comparative look at Americans and their faith and other faiths. And I think they had some very interesting questions in that one about how you view, as a Christian, how do you view Islam? As Islamic, how do you view Christianity and Judaism? That was very interesting. So, a brief look at that. I wanted to give you three principles in summary that LSA considers. This is, we're talking now about how we specifically lobby, for lack of a better word, lobby the government, but we advocate. It's funny, we have a short aside on this. 2 years ago, when I started with this work in Washington, maybe Alex, you might have a pretty good perspective on this. I don't know how many years ago, but a significant amount of time, 5-6 years ago, advocates were those who were kind of separating themselves from lobbyists. You know, if you advocated for something, you were trying to be a little bit different. A lot of your church groups were advocacy groups, or your environmental groups were advocacy groups on behalf of a concept or something other than yourself. But now more and more groups are putting, there are fewer and fewer lobbyists on Capitol Hill and more advocates on Capitol Hill for whatever the group causes. So it's kind of funny semantic difference. But we advocate, we like to think, on behalf of those we serve and explicitly on behalf of the social ministry organizations. That's been a sort of in-house in the Lutheran circle. It's been a division of labor. LSA, mostly what I do is more on the sort of nuts and bolts and programming. And I have some letters to pass around where you try to include language about how this is going to affect those we serve, ultimately the kind of justice issue here. But that's more implicit. The Lutheran Office for Governmental Affairs and the Missouri Synod had an office, actually, that talked specifically on behalf of the church and the church's theological statements, their social statements on certain issues. And they used language about peace and justice and human dignity more explicitly. So we're carrying the same banner, but I think, you know, sometimes it shifts around a little bit. This is a kind of a brief explanation. Yeah.
Just an aside, if we're writing letters to our representatives in government, our elected reps, is it appropriate to quote scripture?
I think it's appropriate. I think it'll depend on, your issue. If you feel there's something specific that is important for you that the Bible says, I mean, if it's important for you to say that the scripture is backs this up specifically, or, you know, I don't think it's inappropriate. I'm not sure. I don't think LSA has, because we're coming at it from a different angle. I mean, we certainly have implicit. But we encourage
myself as an individual.
That's right. We encourage individual Christians to talk about their faith in the letter, not in a rambling fashion, because people don't have time to read that, but certainly in a concise way and a very, if there's a direct connection to make. The Lutheran Office for Governmental Affairs, and I'm sure the Missouri Synod Office, and other mainline offices on Capitol Hill do use scripture quotation a lot. As a matter of fact, they'll kind of use it almost as a theme, a thematic thing. Maybe not proof texting something, but using it as a thematic theological concept, you know, and explicating it. Yeah, I've seen very effective letters.
Okay, yeah. Just wondering.
Yeah.
What's the impact of an email versus a letter?
More recently, emails are better. After the anthrax thing last fall, the letters still go. I think a lot of them go to Lima, Ohio, of all places, to be put through some sort of machine. And I don't know what it does. I'm not sure I want to know what it does. But it goes through a machine and comes back to Washington. So they eventually reach them.
Does it actually run in Washington before it goes to Ohio?
I think it goes to Ohio first, unopened.
Wow.
And then comes back. I think there are other stations, too, that do that. But now, that's in sort of this, you know, unusual time. I mean, emails, I think more and more offices are using email. Alex, can I ask, do you mind if I ask you about that? The sort of priority? I'm asked that a lot.
I would agree. Also because they started to use sorting technology in emails where they pull out keywords, actually. Mm-hmm. So that could be more effective just because it would get in front of you'd like it to more quickly.
They're sorting words like give money to poor.
Offices I know, some of them do use that.
It's interesting. I've been very active on an affordable housing lobbying group, and so a lot of these other groups are not particularly faith-based, but they do great work, and their advocacy groups or their local roll-ups of providers, housing experts, and I go with them on visits, and a lot of times, really the only kind of unique angle I'm bringing to the visit is that we're a faith-based provider, and so I make explicit that we're a faith-based provider, and for some people, that's a turnoff. And you kind of know, you kind of have to know what kind of office you're walking into. And others, it's not. And I wouldn't say, that's nothing that dissuades me from talking about being faith-based. But I think you just say that in different ways. It's been, especially with this language making all this explicit, in some cases it's helpful to the group to say, here is a group that in positive, broad social ways, without advancing their own kind of religious agenda, but in broad social ways is going and, you know, helping out in housing and things. So sometimes it's very helpful, and you have to, you know, but sometimes we're sorted out in that pile also. Yeah. And I would say, I know when I used to work for a congressman, he would say, if we get phone, this is about 10 years ago, if we get phone calls, tally them. If you get a letter, I want to see it. That was his, or a staff, like a higher up staff person wants to see it. I don't know if that's, I don't know.
It's probably fairly consistent. So the question is, you don't feel like you're swallowing your affiliation by downplaying it in certain offices. I mean, you don't feel that that's being disingenuous to the cause.
I don't think so. And the only reason I say that, I mean, that's a good question. Something I struggle with, and I think something that my counterparts struggle with. The reason I don't say that is because I think our buoying theology, the thing that holds us up in that sea, are the kind of roles we were talking about yesterday, actually, the prophets and ministers and servants and stewards. A lot of different concepts, but what I think they add up to, if I can speak specifically Lutheran for a second, I think our Lutheran theology allows us to be in the square, with the public square, arguing passionately, persuading perhaps, representing. But I think it allows us to do that in a way that is not trying to foist ourselves or, you know, sort of en masse or a certain Christian morality on, you know, graft that onto an office or a position or a bill. I think one of the reasons I've really enjoyed this is because explicit part of our Christian witness is that we can, simply by working on behalf of the commonwealth, or on behalf of maybe public schools, or on behalf of things that are for the good of the broader society, I think that is Christian witness. And so we can do that, I think, and be true to who we are as Lutherans and Lutheran social ministry without always naming a name. I've been in an office where I've said I'm Lutheran social ministry, and the person immediately was sort of witnessing and testifying, and that was a connection for this guy. I mean, you know, he, and more power to him, but that wasn't what our meeting was about. You know, our meeting was about affordable housing. And I was there because Lutheran Social Ministry, by way of being Christian in the world, provided affordable housing. That's kind of, I know it's a slippery thing, I struggle with it all the time, but I think that's where I'd come down.
Just as an aside, this is a little off the topic, but I just completed a program, a certificate in community economic development at San Diego State this past winter. When I looked at my first possible internship, the woman who was interviewing me looked at my resume and saw my background, and she informed me I would not be appropriate because I was going to go around proselytizing. Well, I was offended. I made it very clear I wouldn't, and she wrote me a very rude email telling me that I just couldn't intern in her agency.
And that was because of your, just your name, simply that you would...
She looked at my resume. During the interview, I made it very clear to her that was not my intent. I made my theology very clear to her. In fact, I did a little, I guess you could call it proof texting. She was freaked out.
I guess, I mean, that is a frustration for us. There are groups that, really on both sides of this, when you try to occupy middle ground, and when this faith-based initiative gets criticism from both sides of the aisle, people on the left and people on the right, both criticize this for different reasons. Mm-hmm. So you know you're onto something kind of interesting here when you have that kind of criticism. Similarly, we try to occupy a middle ground. We have not, we meaning Lutheran Services in America, has not taken an official position on the initiative in general, the big initiative. But we have supported the Senate version of this. And on Wednesday we talked about the actual bill. The Senate version of this actually has money for direct social service spending for our groups. Doesn't play a kind of shell game. It also has a number of other things like big tax incentive package, but we felt on the balance this was a chance to speak kind of positively as a faith-based group, specifically as a faith-based group, and not support the whole thing. So that's kind of middle ground for us, and there are critics on those groups who sort of, I won't name names here, but I mean there are critics on the left, from the left, who are sort of individual secular rights groups. You might be able to think of groups like that around a certain cause or lifting up immediately the language of this is my right, this individual right, who criticize us for being too faith-based. That's very interesting. And there are groups on the right we've heard from who say Lutheran Services in America, Catholic Charities, are not faith-based at all. They're secular. Look at them. They look as if their hospitals look like the hospitals down the street. Their food kitchens look like any other setup, you know, citizen setup food kitchen. They're not faith-based at all. And so to be in the sort of middle of this is a very interesting position.
Is the faith-based, that will be your bowl of soup paid by the government, but I can give you a sermon before you have the soup?
What do you think of that? What would be, if we can think through this as a group, or what would faith-based mean to you if you were in that position? I can tell you what it might mean to me, but I can tell you what else say things, but I really would like to know.
I wouldn't like that.
It's been very interesting. A lot of people have perspectives on that, I think. Yes?
Just another comment. Last fall, I was an overnight host at our local interfaith shelter in San Diego for the first time. And it was housed in an ELCA church. And one of our guests said to me the next morning, "Why didn't you give me any literature? Why didn't you invite me to worship?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Well, first of all, this isn't my own congregation, but I know you'd be welcome here. Mm-hmm. You'd also be welcome at my church." She was quite appalled. I don't know if she was asking to be invited or whether she thought this was pretty unconventional that we were providing these services without a sermon.
That's a great question. Anybody have insights on that?
I thought it was interesting.
When we get down to it, what is that? What would that exchange look like for you, maybe as a giver or a recipient, and what should it look like? I mean, let's be a little creative. Any thoughts about what that means? The exchange meaning, you know, like a bowl of soup or a cot or something.
Yeah. Okay. It's more than a bowl of soup. She was there for a couple of weeks.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
That's really the heart. That is the heart of this issue. It really is. I can tell you what, I'll lay out what I'll say is, but I really want to hear from you about what you think about that. That's exactly what we're being challenged on by the administration.
I'll just say one more thing. After I left, and after that was her last night there, and after she and her kids packed up, I was thinking, should I have said more? Should I have invited her to worship? Should I have referred her to the pastor of that church? Should I have? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Andrew, when you say that's what you're being challenged on by the administration, do you really mean that there are
to voices that are crafting legislation. I don't mean fringe groups associated with the administration or who pretend to speak for it, but I mean voices in the administration or its allies in Congress that are actually saying to you, either in meetings or in, you know, articles, let's say, that mainline social ministry groups, whether the Catholic Charities, Episcopal Charities, or Lutheran Social Services, and so forth, don't have a place in this discussion because they aren't faith-based? I mean, what are you getting at when you say we're being challenged on that? Because that seems just... And I can't imagine that the administration would say, if you all want a piece of this pie that we're proposing, you all need to start preaching. Is that really what you're hearing?
No, okay. No. We've been challenged.
That's what I was hearing from you, though.
No, there are two sorts of challenges here, I think. One is from other groups, not the administration, from other groups talking about... I think that was leveled by someone from a rather conservative think tank.
Let them.
You know, saying that. This is what goes back and forth in public dialogue.
Right.
Identifying where it's coming from. That was, the charge that some of these large faith-based networks are not, in fact, Christian by their definition, or faith-based by their definition. That they'd probably be synonymous, by the way. Christian and faith-based would be synonymous for thinkers like this. The second thing, more subtle and a bit more insidious, and I would say the administration itself, is the idea that if you are small and new, if you're a smaller, newer church, congregation, startup, social ministry, somewhere they have the idea that those groups are the ones doing the bulk of work and getting proportionally less funding than everybody else. So one of the driving forces here is was an audit done of five federal departments with the sort of preconceived notion that you need to find ways that these groups are not being fairly treated in the granting process from governments, from the departments, and that since they're really shouldering most of the work, social service work, they need to have a better position at the table. Now, hopefully, in some of our advocacy work, we've tried to correct that misconception. We're not, and the other thing I should mention is that Lutheran Services is not necessarily, as a roll-up network, as I said, we're the largest in that sense in the country. But what we represent in some cases are very local groups that are sometimes a volunteer person, a pastor doing half-time work, or perhaps a congregation like yours who's working in tandem with other congregations. That's not an overwhelming social presence in their community. They do great work, but they're not the kind of things that can be indicted by the government for being too big, bureaucrat.
So what you're saying is that the rhetoric seems to equate small with...
smaller is better. It's innovative, it's effective.
Effective. And then the small and effective is often a cloaking device for conservative and evangelical.
I'm not sure I'd say that explicitly, but smaller and better is a cloaking device for more faith-based,
more overtly faith-based in the vision that that Bush seems to have.
Now, I'm not sure the numbers have borne that out, but that was the case. And a lot of times, as you know, in public policy making, if you can corner the sort of, if you can make the case public and make it stick, it doesn't matter what the reality is, really. I mean, it's up to us to disprove that case in terms of reality. And so we've been working on that. Now, we've had very good working relationships with a lot of the people in these various federal departments that really, control this spending, for lack of a better term. And so there's an ongoing perception that groups like Lutheran Social Ministry, Social Services and others, Catholic Charities, United Jewish Communities and others, are doing good work. And that we, even though we get a lot of cash from the government, that's about $7.5 billion annually. That's our total budget. We get about just under $3 billion from federal, from all government sources. Even though we get a large piece of that, that's total government spending, we still spend it, they would say, in an effective way. The underlying question is, as a faith-based group, are we really living out our intention as a faith-based group? Shouldn't we be a little more...
Who's asking that?
...explicitly faith-based?
That's what I'm curious about.
That's rhetoric from the administration. From, specifically, when you hear the president talk about it, obviously. And it's from some members of Congress who crafted the House of Representatives bill that passed through the House, but really didn't go anywhere further than that.
So there is actually a thought that if at some point in whatever legislation does arrive as a sort of conference bill between the House and the Senate, and the President signs it and so forth, mm-hmm. that if there was some sort of litmus test in there, say, are they a religious and faith-based group or are they not, mm-hmm. there has actually been rhetoric to suggest on some serious parties that...
Well, at this point, it's past the rhetoric. One of the provisions carried forward in this House bill, House Representatives bill, is called the Charitable Choice Expansion. And that expands on a 1996 notion involving welfare reform that has to do with the way faith-based groups who are in some sense motivated by their faith can receive direct government funding and still use that funding with less accountability for directly, specifically religious purposes. That already is the case in some social service lines. Child care, one of them, and housing.
But so the idea is that while that language does not expressly say you at Lutherans, so you at LSA are not faith-based enough, what it is essentially doing is helping to funnel some money that might go to is what you're saying? If you feel that it's the backhanded way of saying that because it's mm-hmm. sort of funneling some money mm-hmm. away from organizations like LSA or Catholic Charity, public money, mm-hmm. and putting it elsewhere, because the rhetoric is saying, these people are faith-based. Mm-hmm. Is that what?
Yeah, the funding streams, the channels created by the legislation, might carry with them less accountability standards, health and safety standards for child care, for instance. You don't want... There have been documented cases of child care providers in various states that are set up as a Christian child care something or other, and because of their funding stream they're getting the money through, usually from the state level, it carries less health and safety standards, less inspection, less kinds of student-teacher ratio, various just sorts of basic health and hygiene things. Kids have gotten sick, kids have been caught, or they've been caught having children... muck out stalls and other things, So this is in this argument is the idea that the money would be going to groups, faith-based or not, but mostly groups that would consider themselves faith-based, with less health and safety standards locally, and so that's a troublesome thing for us, and that's a reason we didn't support the House Representatives bill. So that's really that's where the crux of the matter is. The Senate has taken up the same they feel the need to make a faith-based bill in general, but they haven't taken up the pieces of it from the House. They're making their own bill. We feel it's a better piece of legislation, so we're supporting it.
And it does not seem to indict the quality of...
No, the only...
Do you understand what I'm saying? It was that remark of yours that really mm-hmm. caught my attention, mm-hmm. because I cannot imagine that any responsible legislator would actually suggest such a...
No,
you somehow have to prove your faith.
Yes.
Yes,
right. I can understand anxiety going the other way. The upstart evangelical group that wants to preach as it gives out the bowl of soup, having to perhaps satisfy some concerns, different sorts of concerns. But I would be aghast to imagine that legitimate organizations that already exist and have existed for quite some time would have to somehow demonstrate their faith to some sort of
it's not a direct effrontery like that, but it is. But there are subtle ways of changing the legislation so that the funding works different ways. So the questions and things on forms might talk more about how are you, how does this look for your group, and how what kinds of things do you do. giving explicitly faith-based groups a larger place at this table or in the application process. A step even sort of more subtle than that is the notion that the administration, really, I mean, a bureaucracy is a bureaucracy. The federal government is going to continue on and on and on. And there are mid-level managers who care less about this. They're there for their job, their administration. They've been there through the Clinton, the Reagan administration, the first Bush administration, Clinton. And so they see these things come and go. You know, they're not, it's not an all-out sort of conspiracy. But their direction from the top, from some of the administration faith-based offices, is to say, well, we're not going to really, we'll try to do this through legislation. And by this, I mean, we'll try to have a greater place for faith-based groups at a table. These are groups that are not there already, like Lutheran services. But these are groups that might find legislative ways, or might find ways written into law that they can expend social service money without health and safety standards and with a lower level of them. The government's saying about this legislation, that may pass, it may not. The more subtle way we can go about this is through a series of executive orders having to do with all these federal departments, tweaking things here and there, turning a knob here, you know, opening a chute there, that allows just in the general cyclical nature of money coming in and money going out, an increase of the groups that are going to be using money, public money, for explicit religious purpose, with a lot less accountability, a lot less accounting of things. That's a little turn and a twist here and there. I don't think, I mean, that's going to be monitored. There's not a whole lot we can do about that. Those executive orders can be undone by the next president or by President Bush if he chooses. You know, but those are sort of being encoded into law, ratified into law. That's where we're, where our sort of traction is. And so we're working on that. You had a comment a while ago. Excuse me.
Is there at all sort of the theory of the faith-based organization will provide the labor free if we give them the right to give the sermon with the polls?
If the polls
doesn't cost that much, but the labor of putting it out,
yes,
and this,
yes,
and that, mm-hmm, and that effectively reduces your costs, mm-hmm, and their incentive is to really to preach, you know, mm-hmm, about feed. Is that
what? That's one of the you've articulated, I think, one of the criticisms of this, the general picture of the government is using this as kind of a way to get themselves out of social service spending, or at least less social service spending, in large pots of money called block grants, and allowing them to go to groups that will in some way, you know, have the sort of, really, what faith-based groups bring to this is, you know, a lot of volunteer and a kind of mission that's not in the normal transactions of the world. You know, it's kind of apart from that. Why would people be doing this? Well, my faith tells me to do this. Okay, so harness that labor, you're saying, is a less expensive way to do it. That is a criticism of what's going on. And where LSA stands in the middle of this is to say that we invite about half of our total workforce, so about 260,000 people, about half of that, a little less than half, are volunteers through either at their local social ministry or through congregational groups to go and help. But the other half are paid people, and for some of the services and the kinds of things we need, we really do need accredited people who use mainstream practices. I think of counseling, for instance, and or just the kinds of a lot of the direct care medical stuff that we do, or adult disability and developmental disabilities and things. Those volunteers can certainly amplify what we're doing, but there needs to be, I think, a bottom line understanding that the government needs to fund some of these things. And yes, they will fund the civic purposes. The argument in this legislation is, what is a civic purpose? Is a civic purpose using government funding and giving someone a cot or a place, you know, for a couple of weeks in a row and saying, and by the way, your life would be a lot better if you knew Jesus. You probably made some bad decisions in your life. If you happen to accept Christ, you'll probably have a better work ethic. You'll be cleaned up, and you can go out and, you know. That's a very subtle argument, and it's not something that we necessarily, I mean, as Christians, I can't gainsay that the Spirit is going to work in someone's life. But it might work a lot better if we worked on the systemic injustices that were behind these problems, you know, that brought someone there in the first place.
But that's been our liberal argument for so long,
mm-hmm,
and has it worked?
I don't know, we wholeheartedly tried, though.
I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I feel like I'm talking a lot here.
Any one of the programs of, you know, Lyndon Johnson's Great Society were repealed or decimated or underfunded throughout the entire Reagan administration. I mean, I'm not sure that we really, and can you in, you know, a dozen years fix something that involves patience and education? And I'd say no, but that's my basic reaction. We as a society have tried an essential restructuring.
I think when we talk to the national level about it, we, you know, the kinds of ways I talk about faith-based involvement, we're talking about a sort of abiding presence, a sort of, we were using these terms earlier, kind of no questions asked hospitality for people. That a lot of our groups would say that is the gospel in action, and we're living out our gospel mandate when we do that. Other of our groups within LSA, as a broad spectrum, would say we would welcome the chance to provide more explicitly, intentionally, a witness to people saying that I'm here because Christ has changed my life, and Jesus should change your life too, and sort of invite them into the club or the community. And so I think those are two different ways that we're holding attention. But I would say that most of our groups, I think, are going about it in creative ways. Lutheran Social Services of the South, for instance, the president of that had written a great editorial about not proselytizing. They don't do that. But what they're doing is training voluntarily as an employee of Lutheran Social Services of the South. You can sign up voluntarily for something called Stevens Ministry, which is kind of lay ministry and ways to talk about your faith. And they're not going to foist that on anyone, especially when people come in, you know, vulnerable and poor and having a multiple number of problems. Maybe that's not the time to talk about that. But, you know, as someone eventually moves into this program or system and asks that staff person why they're there, when they might be making a lot more elsewhere, or they might, you know, be more mobile going around elsewhere, why stick with this job? They are free to say in this sort of articulate way, well, this is a matter of faith for me. You know, they can say that explicitly. That's not against the law. I mean, they can offer to pray with people if people have said, what I'm really feeling like I should pray with you. That's something that some of our groups are not shying away from. But I think they know as a matter of timing that you have to provide some practical help for people on their feet before you say, primarily what we're about is getting you into the community, baptizing you or whatever, you know, as a confession of faith, and then working with you. I think that's too conditional. Most of our groups wouldn't agree with that. So anyway, that's it. In terms of the liberal art, I mean, that's a very interesting thing. Mark, you bring a longer insight to that, and it's sort of not even a... I don't think it's a steady progression. I mean, we've had ebbs and flows of social gospel and then the Great Depression and sort of war and sort of boom years, you know, and then we have the Great Society, then we have a sort of a defunding of social programs in the Reagan years. And then the question is today... is, you know, where are we in fact seeing a brand new creative way to help fund faith-based programs, or is it really a sort of, are they using it as a stalking horse for pulling out of social service? That's a question that we're going to continue to monitor. Any insights on that? Questions? Before we go, I wanted to share a few resources with you that you might want to note. I've talked a lot, but there are others who say this much more succinctly and on our website in a much more colorful way. Our website, sort of overall, this is like with other links, is Lutheran Services, it's all together, plural, LutheranServices.org. And on there we have a series of short summary windows. We call them windows, short summary things on a faith-based initiative, different aspects of that. This Pew Forum link is Pew, P-E-W, Forum, .org. And they have a very interesting series of reports on on statistics. We were talking earlier about, you know, making that sort of public relations case stick, and it's up to people like us to disprove if you feel dissatisfied with that case. This is a way, you know, sort of unbiased way of getting your hands around some statistics. What are people saying, really?
Is the entire text on the site?
Yeah, you can download it in a full report or just the questions and charts.
Okay,
just the survey.
Yeah.
But here, let me pass. One other one is a really good one on the tax issues, and that's cbpp.org. Stands for the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
That's a government. That's a government organization.
That is an independent research group that, you know, puts out reports on stuff.
Center on Budgeting. What priorities?
Policy priorities.
Thanks.
And last, if you want to get the administration's take on this, is whitehouse.gov.
Whitehouse.com.
Whitehouse.com. Great. Whitehouse.com, we filed under your blue, it's a pornographic site.
Is it .gov or .com?
It's .gov.
Okay.
Otherwise, you'll have a pornographic site on your
All right, that happens anyway.
Yeah,
I really like this whole thing without just downloading it and printing it loosely. Can I send for one of these?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, remember that. I think they'll send you one.
Okay, this is the April.
That's the kind of wrap-up, I think, for sticking with us to the very end here.
Thank you.
If you have any questions about that, here, let me... this is my box. I like hanging out my boss's card, because I'm only going to be at Lutheran Services another couple of weeks.
Thank you.
But this is our office, at least. Please call us if you're interested in these issues. Do you guys want to come?
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you going to do next?
I'm going to show my boss this.
I'm moving,
here.
Actually.
Here you are.
Thank you.
But you're staying with the same company?
I'm moving to England to go to school.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Hey, Drew, thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.